Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kiley.
I'm Jeff Sanders.
And this is Engaging Culture, a podcast presented by Bridgeway Christian Church. On today's episode, we're going to take a look back at 2025, talk about some of our favorites from the year, maybe make a few predictions for 2026, and have a little fun along the way. All of that and more on this episode of Engaging Culture. All right, here we are.
Here we are. Happy New Year.
We made it. Happy New Year.
We have been not
podcasting for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Our esteemed co-host, Josh Utes, decided he would not podcast for another couple of weeks. But that actually is a segue into an announcement we ought to make, and that is that for the year of our Lord 2026, Engaging Culture will be shifting down to every other week.
Yes.
Instead of every week. Hopefully increasing the quality of our episodes while decreasing their frequency. And we'll see. Perhaps we won't stick with that the entire year. If we feel like every week is necessary, maybe we'll jump on it.
I'll also say that we really value feedback, right? Yeah. And so let us know kind of what is working, what isn't, what you're enjoying, what you're not. All of that is always good. You can email me at bkiley@bridgeway.church.
Yep.
I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. Any positive comments there, complaints, jsanders@bridgeway.church. So, or stop us in the lobby. We love to hear from
100%.
You. So, Pastor Judah, what is the best thing you saw this week?
Yeah, so in my family, we have a tradition called a crowning ceremony,
okay.
And it's a tradition for our elders, kind of our elder leader, whoever that is, kind of the oldest kind of leader of the family.
Okay.
And essentially, it's 11 rituals. I'm always scared to say rituals because that can sound like witchcrafty, but just like 11 ceremonies where we kind of honor the elder, and then they kind of appoint, so to speak, kind of the next oldest person that's like, hey, it's your job to take care of the family.
Oh, interesting.
And so my grandmother had her crowning ceremony.
Wow.
And it was really, really beautiful and special.
So give us some insight. What is involved in a crowning ceremony?
Mm-hmm. So it starts off, we come together and the first part is to set the intention of like, we're intentionally saying that you are no longer responsible for this,
okay.
And somebody else is, and making sure that they are clearly empowered to take care of the family.
Hmm.
Kind of more in an emotional sense and a gathering of the family sense. There is the reason it's called the crowning is because we pray over the crown. So it just is like we lay hands, but like a lot on the head. Because this is the head of the kind of the family, and we pray. We do libations, which is not like drinking, but like there's a tradition where we water a plant, and every time you pour some water into the plant, you call the name of an ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea of the ancestor has died, but their life gives life, right? That because of them, life can continue. And so you water the plant kind of to symbolize that.
Got it.
And so you do that. Everybody writes a letter to the person, the elder, and they get like this box of letters.
Wow.
We do a stone ceremony, which is where you take a stone, and my family does stone ceremonies for everything, but you take a stone and you whisper your prayer for them in there. They're the only person who hear it, and you put the stone in the box. And the idea is that they look at those boxes and all those stones and know that there have been all of these prayers. And then they pass on the shawl. There's a shawl, and they pass it on to the next leader. And then you eat and you tell funny stories. And so my grandmother just had hers, and she's she really is just one of the most incredible people. And to look back on her life, and I mean, just even her like resume, I mean, she was a CNN Hero of the Year.
Wow.
She was Woman of the Year by the California State Department. She's just accomplished so much in the, because her life's work was around making sure that babies could be born safely.
Wow.
And so she started the Birthing Project, which started off as the Birthing Project Sacramento, which was the first maternal ward for Black women, or that really like spoke to the needs of Black women.
Yeah.
And then it became the Birthing Project USA and then the Birthing Project International. And then that model was replicated everywhere and now is the gold standard for maternal wards for women of color.
Dang, that's amazing.
It's really incredible. And then she started the Safe Birth Kit campaign. So in like places like Malawi, babies were being born, and because there were no there was no resources. They were dying. A lot of times, literally falling out and hitting their heads on the ground and dying.
Oh my gosh.
And so she decided to create these birth kits, these safe birth kits that could be shipped anywhere in the world for not a ton of money that had all kinds of things in it, including babies were dying because women did not have the tools to cut umbilical cords, right? And wow. So they would use like broken glass or whatever they could get their hands on. And that's pretty graphic and intense. So like one small thing in these kits is like a razor so that they can cut the umbilical cord. And so those have now become like the gold standard, and those go out everywhere. And so anyway, just looking at her life and being a part of honoring her, and she is why I'm a traveler today. She sent me to Honduras when I was 16. One of our traditions in my family is when our elders say a boy is ready to be a man, he has a rites of passage, and a part of that is he gets shipped off somewhere to serve. Wow. And so I got sent to Honduras. That's why I travel today.
Wow.
Right? Because like I went and like got bit by it, and I worked in this makeshift pharmacy. I was the pharmacist for Garifuna people. Garifuna are Black Hondurans, so they're Africans who overthrew their captors, crashed on the banks of Honduras, fought the indigenous people, got chased basically up into the mountains, and like stayed there ever since, kind of in these rural communities. I learned how to give shots at 16. I can administer an injection because of that. Anyway, so that's
wild.
That's the best thing that I saw this week.
I was like, all right, that's a pretty good podcast. I think, we'll be back. Yeah, that was great.
What about you?
Cool. Yeah, best thing I saw this week was 1 week ago today, I got to meet my very first biological nephew. So my brother and sister-in-law who live in San Francisco had a baby, and it had been a long journey for them to be able to have a baby, and it just kind of worked out for my wife and I to be able to head down there on New Year's Eve. He was born on the 30th, like real late at night, and we got to meet him the next day, little Hudson, and just couldn't be happier for my brother, and his wife is wonderful, and just so thrilled for her as well. And it's just so funny because in my family, you know, I've got my two brothers, and I've always been the only one with kids. And it's like, you know, I'm bringing kids to the things. We're adjusting for the kids. We're okay, let's have it at Brian's house because the kids are there. And it's just going to be so funny as the years go on. Like, my kids are, you know,
they're going to be the big cousins,
like they're
cousins,
like teenager and preteen, and now it's going to be somebody else has like the kids that need to require a little more attention. So I am very ready to pass along that mantle to my siblings.
Passing of the shawl.
So
it trippy? I only have one brother that has a kid, and he's my younger brother, and he has one son, and it's the most trippy thing that he's a dad. Is that you've been grown a lot longer than me, and your brothers have been grown a lot longer than me? Is it trippy to you, like the idea, like my brother is somebody's
he's
father.
Like, wait a second, he's responsible for another human. I mean, yes and no. No, in the sense that obviously a little bit later in life for him, relative to maybe when some folks. I mean, people
correct.
Have kids at different ages.
My brother was 21,
so he's into his 30s. He was born December 23rd, so I always like get like, okay, what year is it? How is he has
happy
his
birthday brother?
Yet? Right, yeah. So he's 36, and he's just an amazing person, a fantastic human being, and he's going to be a terrific dad. So in that sense, I'm like, nah, he's going to crush this and he's going to be fantastic. But in the sense of like, yeah, I have 36 years
this
of life with him,
brother,
with him not being a dad. And now
child.
He is like, wait a second. That's, you
is
know,
he older
that's
than you or younger than you? Are you, how old are you?
I said he was 36, Judah. How old do you think I am?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't ask those kind of questions.
I am the oldest.
I ask when are my deliverables due?
He is younger than me by a considerable margin, I'm sad to say. I am 43. So, So anyway, but very excited for him, and it was just an absolute thrill to go down and meet the little guy. So we will be right back. Well, we are back, and we are going to share some of our favorite things from the year of our Lord, 2025.
These are a few of my favorite things.
We'll see if we talk about raindrops on roses or whiskers on kittens.
I'm so pleased at how cultured you are.
I knew you'd be so happy to hear me.
Sometimes my little heart just beams. I just look at you and
pick up the Sound of Music reference.
It's been really hard pastoring you the past 5 years. I'm glad that I've really developed you.
Developed me into a culture.
I really
am. I'm sorry to tell you. Okay. All right. Total aside here. Mm-hmm. I grew up watching The Sound of Music and love The Sound of Music. And when Christy and I were dating, one day over like winter break, we were both still in LA for some reason. She came over to where I was living, and I was like, let's watch The Sound of Music. So we watched The Sound of Music, and this is like an old school VHS tape from, this is back in the day. And it had an intermission in it.
Yeah.
And it gets to the intermission, and she goes, "This is only intermission." She was so mad.
You almost ruined your chances there, sir.
More to watch. But we eventually saw Sound of Music at the theater here in Sacramento when they came. It was fantastic. So anyway, sorry to tell you, I don't like theater as much as you, but I do like theater. Mostly sorry to tell you that part, because you seem to think that, my movie recommendations are not going to be the super highbrow. But
anyway,
here we go. Favorite books of 2025. What were some of your favorites?
Okay, so a couple of my favorites. I reread Spare, which is the book written by Prince Harry from, England, the royal family. And, I really love books that, give you kind of a peek behind the curtain of, a lived experience that's just really far from your own. And, I'm not going to give the royal family, too much empathy. Their lives are, so hard. But it did, really soften my, there are some challenges to being kind of in these prominent, high-pressure positions. And then I also reread Alexander the Great by Philip Freeman. And Alexander just was an incredible but complicated person. I mean, he's really one of those people who was not a good guy. And was not also a bad guy. He just really was a human with a lot of talent and skill and power and money. And so I really enjoyed that. And then you made me read What Gen Z Really Wants to Know About God by Tanita Maddox. And she was actually on here. Yeah. And that actually was a really helpful book for ministry for me. Yep. So that's what I read. What about you?
Yeah, love that one as well. My favorite book of the year was Platform to Pillars by Mark Sayers. I'm blanking on the subtitle. Trading the Burden of Performance for the Freedom of God's Presence. And it was terrific. Mark Sayers, if you are not familiar with the Rebuilders podcast, it is well worth your listen. I've never in my life encountered somebody who has more insightful cultural commentary than Mark Sayers. He lives in Australia, pastors over there. And his Platforms to Pillars concept was phenomenal. And I thought he did an amazing job of just, there was a lot of biblical analysis in there. And kind of the whole point was, we live in this era of everyone gets a platform and everyone wants a platform and it just doesn't work.
It sure doesn't.
Even if we get a platform, we're unhappy and anxious and all of these other things. When the reality is we're invited to be pillars, and pillars hold things up. They make space for others. They don't draw a lot of attention to themselves. And I actually used the Platform to Pillars concept a while ago, speaking at a retreat for our senior adults, encouraging them to be pillars in our church. And anyway, I loved that concept. Highly, highly, highly recommend it. You really can't go wrong with Mark Sayers. It is not light reading, nor is Rebuilders light listening. So you need to kind of be in the mood for it. But
what do you mean when you say it's not light?
It's just deep. It's dense. I don't really tend to read Mark Sayers right before bed, for example. So anyway, and then 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. It is rare that I say a book changed my life. That book changed my life, and it really impacted the way I think about
it.
Time. And yes, you should. I liked it so much, I bought it for Pastor Judah.
Yeah. Maybe read that too.
It really changed the way I thought about time. I thought it really addressed a lot of the angst I feel in my own spirit about, man, I want to do all these things, and I feel this dissatisfaction of not doing enough or not feeling like I can do enough. And he's not a Christian. It's not a Christian book, and certainly, there are elements of his worldview I wouldn't endorse. But I just thought the book was fabulous. So 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals,
I'm
Oliver
gonna go
Berkman.
Back and finish that.
Yeah, you should. You'll be better for it. So, how about movies? What was a movie or two that you saw this year that you really enjoyed?
So, I loved the movie Sinners. It is by Ryan Coogler, who did Black Panther and Fruitvale Station, and not a Christian movie, actually.
Really?
In some ways, although there's a lot of intersection with Christianity in terms of the subject matter, but it's about vampires, actually.
Right.
But what was so beautiful about it was the ways that he tied in and told the story. It's this movie about vampires, and you know, it's fantastical and big and scary and whatever. Not horror, but borderline. But the thing that he did was that he told the story of three people groups just so beautifully through that story of Irish people, Choctaw people, and black people from the South. This is literally my DNA.
Yeah.
I'm Choctaw, Irish, and black.
Wow.
And the ways that those actually three communities actually had a real relationship with each other. People forget that Irish people were super poorly treated when they got here. And so they actually built deep relationships with the black community for years and years and years. That's a part of why there are so many black people that have Irish blood.
Yep.
And then at some point they realized that they could have a different experience if they were like, hey, we're like actually white. And so they, you know, and that's what happened. But it was just such a well-done, well-written, well-produced. It may not be your vibe, but just from a technical, you produced a really good movie. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Anything else? Or is that your one?
I don't think I really watched a whole lot of other movies. Wicked. There's of course Wicked. I did love Wicked. I don't know how much of that was like nostalgia and like I love the source material and I'm just a fan.
Yeah.
I need to probably go back and rewatch both to see if they are, how they stand just as movies and not as content that I already was in love with.
Yeah. No, it took us a while to get to Wicked, but we eventually did, my wife and I, and I thought it was fantastic. But my favorite movies of the year are both dumb. They are not movies that are going to win Oscars, but they were just what they needed to be. Now You See Me, Now You Don't is the third in the trilogy. Yep. Did you see it?
I didn't, but I heard about it.
It was... I love the whole trilogy. Mm. It's terrific. I really enjoy magic, and kind of magic is a theme in these movies.
I knew that.
Yeah, like, you know, like sleight of hand
type
stuff.
Like,
I find that very entertaining.
Have you met Lance Hahn?
Oh, yeah, no, we've
discussed
it. You
guys will be good friends.
And so obviously there's the magic element. There's like, you know, suspense and action. But, you know me, I don't do violence. So there's nothing like crazy in that regard. And I just walked out of the theater. We took our kids to see it. And I was like, that movie was exactly what I wanted it to be. Mm. It was fun. It had some suspense. It had some twists and turns along the way. There was cool magic. It was great. Just an easy, light,
fun. Is that the one where like they hired the magician to like do the heist?
Kinda. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the general premise.
I think I might have seen that.
Yeah. The new one? There's three.
No, because I watched it on something streaming.
Yeah, no. They're all of them are worth watching, but the new one was fantastic. And then also, I love a good spoof. Like, I really love a good spoof. Like, love Airplane and all of that. And I love the new Naked Gun movie. It is very PG-13, just putting that out there. But it's just so dumb and so silly. And I spend so much of my life on serious things and deep things and things that require a lot of brain power. So when I watch a movie, I just want
to
laugh.
100%.
And I loved it. I saw it in theaters, and then I don't know, whatever it was, MGM or Paramount Plus, I got a week-long free trial just so I could watch it again. And it was just, I loved it. It's so stupid.
Now go ahead and unsubscribe for that free trial before they charge you again.
A lot. So, all right, how about TV? What was what TV can you recommend for us?
So, again, I spent a lot of this year, I will rewatch and reread things that I've already read and watched before. Apparently, that's an ADHD common kind of trait.
Uh-huh.
And so I think I've talked about this before, but I rewatched S-E-E.
Okay.
It stars Jason Momoa, and the premise is that we have destroyed each other with nuclear war, and humanity has emerged blind. Everybody. Nobody can see.
Wow.
And so what would a society be where everybody is blind?
Dang, and that's an interesting premise.
It is the most interesting world building that I've ever seen in my life, because society in some ways technologically has regressed.
Yeah.
So they don't have like, you know, computers and all that stuff. It's regressed. But, you know, how do we fight physically if we can't see? How do we send messages? How do we ride horses? How do we who becomes the most powerful in society? Is it somebody who has a really strong sense of smell? Is it somebody who, you know, and so it's this whole society. And in the society, because sight has been gone for so long, for thousands of years, it is now considered witchcraft and heresy.
Wow.
The idea of sight.
That's wild.
And so these twins are born, and they can see. And so it's their journey of like, you guys are witches, you guys are heretics, like this. And even it's been really interesting to think about, like, how do you describe sight to somebody who has no concept of sight?
Oh my gosh.
You know,
yeah.
our friends today who are blind, of course they know what sight is. They, you know, but if nobody has ever had sight for thousands and thousands of years, how do you explain what it is?
Yeah.
How do you explain what books are?
Right.
To somebody who's never,
yeah,
you know.
What platform is that on?
It's on TV One. It's really good. It is violent.
Okay.
It is when they stab you, it's blood.
okay.
And so that's a little bit intense.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. But I really love it. It's got Jason Momoa and Alfre Woodard. And anyway, it's really good.
Great. My answer is literally the same as my answer when we did a recap episode 1 year ago.
Love
and that,
that
is
for
to
you.
Say... I don't really watch a lot of TV that's not sports.
Consistency.
And Jeopardy. My wife would be much better at this. She watches a lot more shows than I do. But I loved Man on the Inside. Last year, I loved season one. This year, I loved season two.
Is that with Denzel?
No, it's with Ted Danson.
Okay.
And it's just, that show's got a little bit of everything. It's funny. It's a little goofy. It's heartfelt. There's, you know, relationship stuff. There's solving a mystery. It's, I don't know. It's just, it's relatively... clean in terms of there's nothing crazy in it in terms of it's going to be totally, you know, super objectionable. And it was just a lot of fun. So Man on the Inside, season one was better.
What is it on, you said again?
It's on Netflix. But season two is quite good as well. And Ted Danson enjoying quite the late career.
Yeah, a little bit of a late bloom.
Yeah,
we love that for him though.
Pretty interesting. So all right, last two. We'll do this one quick, and then we'll spend a little more time on the last one. Favorite place you visited?
Amsterdam. And one of the things I did in Amsterdam is I went to the Anne Frank house, like the house,
right.
If you read the Diary of Anne
Frank.
I think
you told us about that.
I probably did tell you on this, so I won't go into it again. But Amsterdam is beautiful and fun and very peaceful, and I needed to be there during that time, and it was... a wonderful soul. Everybody should take a solo trip. Like, truly, go by yourself. No friends. Don't know nobody there. The amount of thinking that you do is wonderful. So, Amsterdam. What about you?
Yeah.
I think I know what this is. Can I guess?
Yeah.
Bend?
No, didn't make it to Bend this year, unfortunately.
Where did you go? You went somewhere up there and you like loved it and raved about it.
Yeah, it was last year. It wasn't this year. Okay. Didn't make it this year. But no, this year's got to be Costa Rica. So got to go to a few different places, but Costa Rica was kind of a lifetime, you know, trip in the sense of...
I think we were there at the same time.
Yeah, we were there at the same time. But got to take my family there. First time I'd taken my boys out of the country and all of that. And especially the jungles of Costa Rica.
Yes.
I loved. The coast was great, but I really loved being in the rainforest and all that. Oh yeah, no, I got up early on our last day and went to La Fortuna waterfall, and it's a bit of a hike down and back up, and that was wasn't a solo trip, but it was a solo trip that day, and it was probably better because there are a lot of stairs. And
I can't remember is that one that's privately owned?
I don't know. You have to pay to get into it.
There are a lot of them that are privately owned, which is really special in Costa Rica because it's literally like a family and you like knock on their door and you're like, hey, can I pay you?
Yeah, no, this wasn't that.
Oh, okay.
But it was, Costa Rica is just beautiful and amazing and a little humid, but I loved it. And it was a real treat. Again, just to take a family of four to a different country is not cheap. So it is not something we do regularly, but it was a blessing to get to do that. Okay. Favorite Bridgeway moment or moments from this last year?
So there have been so many really cool moments. One of them most recently was during the Hot Cocoa Bar. There was a family who came through.
During Christmas services.
During Christmas services, sorry. The family was deaf. And the ways that our team just made sure that the children specifically got the full experience, because a part of the experience of the Hot Cocoa Bar is placing your order and getting to be picky and decide what do you want, and it's just a part of it. And just watching the ways that we have built here an inclusive culture that allowed this boy to be able to just fully participate.
Yeah.
You know, enough of us knew a couple little signs. Nobody knew a bunch of sign language, but I know candy, she knows whipped cream, she knows hot. And we were able to do that and just engage with him. And it was just really cool to me that was something that could happen here, because it, as normal as it is for Bridgeway, it is not the experience everywhere in the world. And so I really, really, really enjoyed that. And then I really loved The Well.
Yeah.
The Well is the event that I'm probably most proud that we did. It was a ton of work. And just the amount of people that were blessed by it, the amount of people that were on campus for it, it was incredible. And the last thing I'll say was we just had our winter formal. And it's just a party. It's just a Christmas party. But it was just fun. And I just always love when I can, like, look out and see the young folks just, like, having fun together.
Yeah.
And it's safe. And it's just cool.
I don't even know if you know this. I was on campus during the BYA winter formal because I was there for the Christmas rehearsal.
I don't think I know that you were on campus. But I knew that there were people on campus because we were practicing.
So I just went out and, again, you know, it was kind of watching for a little bit, and just it was fun seeing everyone having a good time. So yeah, that was a great event.
Yeah. What about you? What are some things from Bridgeway that you just had a good time with?
So one of my favorite things. So back in 2023, I had a gentleman in our congregation reach out to me wanting to meet, which wanted to talk about some things. He'd been a Christian for a few years at that point, relatively new to faith, but was, you know, had some questions about some different things. So we connect and we kind of struck up a friendship and we met a handful of times, and he has a background in AA. And he eventually ended up referring a friend of his from AA who had, like, some God questions to me. And he's like, hey, you know, go meet with Brian. He can, you know, he'll help you out. You know, I've met with him a bunch of times. So this guy who disconnected from church, no real church involvement at all, substantively really ever in his life, you know, comes and meets with me. And we have a great conversation for like an hour. And we strike up a friendship where he comes and, you know, we've probably met, and now this is fast forwarding to 2025, we've probably met a dozen times or so in my office. And he would come with all these questions. And he would, the number of F words that were said in my office, exclusively by him, just to be clear, during our meetings was wild. It was very different than a normal meeting I would. But over the course of time, to see the way that God has worked in this dude's life, that now he's here at Bridgeway, he and his family attend regularly, he serves on the greeting team, and, you know, we're overdue to get together. I got to reply to a text to him, in fact, to get our next meeting on the calendar. And now he's referred a friend to me who's kind of in the same spot he was a year ago, and I've met with him. And it's so funny. I love these conversations because I don't have any experience with Alcoholics Anonymous personally, but everybody I've ever met who's gone through AA, there is just no pretense with them. It's like, what you see is what you get. They are into radical honesty, which I am also.
It's necessary.
And a lot of times, you know, just as a pastor, people are trying to put on a, you know, different kind of front for you, whatever, which I understand. There is none of that with this dude, like none. And it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
He just is who he is, and we just talk, and it's great. And Pastor Heather has even commented. She's like, gosh, I just love your energy after you finish meeting with these guys. Like, you're like so happy and like so excited. And it's just, anyway, this dude that I've met with a whole bunch of times, just great guy. The original dude, also a great guy who we don't meet as much anymore, but we chat in the lobby for 5 minutes or more several times a month. Like, it's, you know, and it just having those relationships and being able to kind of walk with and disciple those guys. It's just, you know, it's behind the scenes stuff. Nobody sees it. And it's just like, that is the stuff that really fires me up.
I love the idea that, like, being your authentic self could bless somebody in a way that you have no idea.
Totally.
Right? Like he's not coming into your office like, I'm going to drop a couple F-bombs and just be very candid and honest and vulnerable and honest. And it's going to bless Brian. Brian's going to walk out feeling better than maybe he felt when he walked into the meeting. That's dope.
Nope. He's just, this is who I am. And just, again, to see his spiritual hunger and all that, it was just pretty awesome. And then just real quick, from an event standpoint, loved our men's retreat. It was phenomenal.
Great.
I historically am just not somebody who has enjoyed men's ministry in my Christian life. Mm-hmm. We have an amazing men's ministry. I love our men's ministry,
That's true.
I love going to their stuff. Pastor Rodney preached incredibly. Pastor Dylan and Rayon led us in, is amazing. And then just, I'm really proud of our first Family Alpha that we did this fall.
Yeah.
That was a lot of work. Pastor Heather and Pastor Ashley did a ton of the work on that, and just neat to see families showing up and all the things that we were able to do just create space for those types of just kind of discipleship conversations in families was pretty awesome. So, and then just, you know, there's always, you could say this, 1,000 small moments along the way
100%.
That are super fun. All right, we'll be right back.
All right, we want to do some more introspective reflection and just kind of think back on some of the deeper parts of last year. And so, Pastor Brian, I'm curious, in what ways do you think that you're not the same person that you were a year ago?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as Judah and I are each going to answer three of these types of questions, and want to encourage you, listener, just be thinking about this for yourself. I think that, to be honest, a lot of what I experienced this year hardened me in some ways and made me realize kind of the need to, I don't know, maybe not be as trusting as I am in some circumstances. I want to be clear, that was nothing to do with anybody on our staff or anything like that. Our staff is amazing. But just had some experiences where I was really disappointed and really hurt in some ways. And just in some ways, I'm still kind of recovering from that. At the same time,
can't relate.
I know. Just imagine. At the same time, I think that I am learning the joy of sort of accepting your life for what it is. And I have a great life. Like I have a great life. So, like in so many different ways, right? And the joy that comes from kind of life is what it is, and I don't have to freak out about everything, and I can kind of have that like, hey, what does it take to get me riled up? I can sort of let that bar move a little higher so I'm not operating in that space of sort of anxiety and frustration as much. I think I'm learning, and I don't know, maybe this is part of just middle age, but you just learn to kind of take things a little bit lighter, which so these things kind of sound contradictory to here. In one sense, I feel like I've had to harden in some ways, but in some other ways, I've realized, I don't know, there can be a joy in just accepting your life for what it is and not wishing it was something else.
That's right.
And again, my life is very good. I'm not sitting here going, you know, oh man, I've just learned to accept misery. That's not the case. But I think I have grown in that area significantly this year, and not by accident. I've really sought to grow in accepting the life that God has given me, being grateful for the life that God has given me, and trying to make the most of that life. So, all right. So my first one for you is, what part of you grew that nobody really saw?
So, you know, interestingly enough, I actually had to reevaluate my like relationship with alcohol late October, early November.
Okay.
Because I was like coming home and I was having a glass of wine and then turned into two glasses of wine. And then I like was like, oh, like you're doing this every night now and it's, you're not drunk, but you're struggling, you're coping.
Sure.
And so I really had to have a real honest assessment. And so that really changed my sleep hygiene, the ways that I was trying to navigate sleep. And, you know, nobody sees you sleep, you know, particularly when you're, you know, a single male that lives alone.
Yep.
And so the part of me that grew was, one, I just was like, okay, we're not drinking anymore because this is how you become, you know, this is how you get a habit. This is how you get into addiction. But also, like, I've grown so much in terms of the intentionality with sleep.
Yeah.
I have such a system now. I take my magnesium, my cortisol manager. I stop eating 3 hours before I go to bed. I take a hot shower followed by a very, very cold shower. I have eucalyptus. It's a whole thing. And I just was never that guy who was like, I was the guy who was like, it's time to go to bed, get in bed, go to sleep, you know? And so, that was a way that I grew that nobody would have seen.
Wow. I'm really taking your sleep hygiene seriously.
Yeah.
I've sought to take some steps that direction too. And I'm not quite where you are, but, it's important. It's important.
And
stuff.
I will say that one of the things that teaches you is that, like, and I've had to become peaceful about this, is like, sometimes you fall asleep quick and sometimes you don't. You know, sometimes you do all the things, and literally last night was this night. I took my bag, I did all the things, and I wasn't able to get to sleep until 2.
Yikes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I was going to say, in my world, sometimes you don't fall asleep, and sometimes you don't. It's not sometimes you do, but anyway. All right, hit me with my next
one. I'm curious for you, what is a habit or pattern that you started questioning this year?
So I have questioned the value of social media in my life for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And both I don't post a ton. I mean, every now and then and exclusively on Instagram. And it's usually not serious stuff. I enjoy sharing just fun moments with my kids or, you know, sports things or whatever. Occasionally, it's more serious. But even just the scrolling and consuming social media and all of that. And, you know, I think that's a relatable very few of us are trying to increase the time we spend on social media, right? And I've always kind of been frustrated with how much time I spend, and it's not a crazy amount. But finally in September of this year, I was just like, this is not, like, I don't want to do this anymore. And the biggest thing was, honestly, I was finding things out about people that I'd rather not know. And that is, I think, one of the real challenges of social media. You're finding out the views that people have about all sorts of controversial topics, and they're people you hardly know. Like, I want to have a lot of relational connection with someone before I start learning their more controversial views that I may or may not agree with.
Parts or whatever.
So at least then you go, all right, well, whatever. They might think differently than me. We're still friends and everything else. Whereas now I'm realizing with social media, I'm just having to hear about oftentimes very views that I find very distressing about people I hardly know and all of that. And then, you know, not to mention just everything else you see from strangers and all that.
It's a lot.
And I just was like, all right, I'm quitting cold turkey. And I'm not saying it's forever, but we're sitting here on January 7th and I have not logged into social media for any reason on any platform in over 3 months. And I miss hearing the fun stuff from other people. I'm way less connected to people I don't see. And I regret that. I wish there was a way to stay a little bit more connected with those folks, but I don't really miss it. And I think I'm 3 months in. And again, I'm not saying it's forever. I may go back to Instagram eventually. There are things about it I enjoy, but it has been very good for my mental health.
It used to be like a social media where, like, you're not allowed to post. Like, you're really only allowed to post, like your family and, like you can't talk about politics. That's right. You can't talk about social issues, whatever.
Yeah.
A really limited one.
Kidding. So, yeah, I obviously have questioned that habit for a long time and finally made a change. So, how about for you? And by the way, we each know which questions are coming. We're not just coming up with this on the spot. But what risk did you take that you're still proud of, even if it didn't work out?
Yeah, so one of the things that I learned about myself in 2025 that was really surprising, I've always seen myself as an individual. Like, yeah. If you've seen me, if you know me, you can look at me and tell that I'm the type of person who's like, this is who I am, and I just stand in who I am, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I realized this year that I was making so many choices for other people and their expectation based on other people. Not even always for other people, but based on other people. And so I'll give you like an example. That's not one from my real life, but like, for example, you're a runner, right?
Yep.
And you may run 20 miles a day. And because you're somebody, you don't run, he doesn't run 20 miles a day.
I
want to be clear. He gave me the side eye. He does not run 20 miles a day. So you may run 19 miles a day. And
right. There we go. Thank you.
And I look up to you. I respect you. And so I would look at somebody like you and think, oh, this is what you're supposed to do if you are trying to be a healthy human is you run 20 miles a day. And so one of the things that I've learned this year is that there were things that were right for other people. Yep. Brian runs 20 miles a day. I don't necessarily need to run 20 miles a day.
Yep.
And having to let go of feeling like a bad person or a bad guy or that I'm doing it wrong when I say, I'm not running 20 miles.
Yeah.
He ran 20. That's his calling. I'm going to run these 2 miles and then I'm going to walk to the donut shop. Glory to God. And so the risk for me was deciding to make decisions based on what I wanted and felt called to.
Yep.
Personally, as opposed to, and this is hard when it's people that you just like admire and you're like, no, these are the best people on the world and I want to be like them.
Yeah.
But maybe that's not what I'm called to. Yep. And that just feels risky.
Yeah. I think that's, sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. I think that's so healthy and so important because we can live our lives trying to live up to standards that other people have set for themselves. And oftentimes our perception of those standards,
correct,
which is imaginary.
Correct.
And you realize like, no, actually I'm not called to be like them, just like they're not called to be like me.
Right.
And we
I'm called
put
to be
this,
healthy.
Yeah. We
but
put
not
this
bad.
Weird pressure on ourselves that really doesn't need to exist.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right. I'll tell you another risk for me this year was just like going back to the gym. And taking my health seriously again because I've done it before. Mm-hmm. And so I lost like 100 pounds and then I gained about 50 back.
Yep.
And to try to lose that 50 again was really scary because it was like, well, you didn't maintain before. What's going to happen this time? And so I think the risk was like, be willing to fail. You might fail.
Yep.
And actually what I learned is that most failure does not have the permanent catastrophic consequences that we feel like it does in the moment. Yeah. Some things do.
Yeah.
But actually, a lot of things are like, if you fail, you'll adjust.
Yeah.
If you mess up, you'll get back up, you'll dust yourself off, you'll figure it out.
Teddy Roosevelt's man in the arena quote is kind of a cliche, but it's so true. Kind of that idea
of, I
mean, I don't have it memorized verbatim, but kind of the gist of it is like the credit belongs to not to the person who stood on the sidelines and criticized or gave advice or said how things ought to have been, but the credit goes to the person who actually got in the arena and tried to do something. So basically, if that person succeeds or fails, they at least are not, you know, the poor soul who stood off in the distance and never knew victory or defeat because they didn't try. Look up Teddy Roosevelt, Man in the Arena. It's a great quote, but the gist of it is like, get out there and do something. Yeah. And that's become a motto for me, just in my personal life, in my work life. You end up regretting the things you don't do way more than the things you do. So just give it a shot. All right, if you fail, you fail. And that's not an excuse for recklessness, of course, but anyway.
Yeah. So I have one more for you. And I'm curious, what did this year teach you about how you love or are loved? And I actually, this is the one I'm actually most interested in your answer.
I could do a whole podcast on
this. Oh, yes. Take your time. Because I feel like, let me open my notes app.
Oh, stop it. This was a great year for me in a lot of ways in terms of the most important relationships in my life. My wife and I are in a good spot. My kids and I are in a good spot. Just wonderful times of connection with just a handful of close friends and really grateful for that. And I am an anxious attacher, if you know anything about attachment.
Are you?
Oh, big time. Big
really?
Time. Big time.
I would not
attacher.
Have guessed that about you. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I've really done a lot of work to try to become less anxious in my attachments and trying to notice. And even, you know, I won't give examples, but I can think of examples from this last year where that anxious way of attaching really flared up and I had to pay attention to that and go, okay, what's going on? And thankfully, like, God really met me in that in a lot of ways. So I think I've learned this year to be a little less anxious in my attachments in general, to be a little bit more secure in who I am, in the relationships that I have. Because I think a lot of people have this, but I have that voice in the back of my head going, like, you know, nobody likes you. Everyone's just pretending. They just sort of tolerate you. And that's kind of it. But I also, and I won't get into the whole story here, but I had this really beautiful moment with God in like July or August. I had taken my son to a baseball game and I'd gotten home, and I have a hard time sleeping, especially if I'm coming home straight home from an event, like especially a sporting event or speaking or whatever. And normally I just waste an hour, you know, I'll watch TV, play Xbox, whatever, and then go to bed. But I decided to actually like spend some time with the Lord and all of that during this, and just felt like God met me in that moment in such a profound way, because I was kind of giving myself a little pity party that was not undeserved at that point. And I felt like God said, you know, Brian, part of the reason why you struggle so much with attaching anxiously, and part of the reason why you lack this confidence in the depth of your relationships is actually you have a lot of people pouring into you all the time, but there's part of like the bucket of you, the bucket of like Brian feeling relationally connected. Like, it was almost like God was saying to me, like, there's part of that that like I need to be responsible for. And, or if anything, forgive the reference to the old nursery rhyme, like there's a hole in your bucket. And if you don't let me fill that hole, you can have people pouring into you and loving you and being kind to you and showing how much you mean to them all the time. And you're just never going to be fully okay. And that was a really profound, in fact, I have one of the many knickknacks in my office is a reminder to me of that night. And just that reminder of going, I am loved by God, that He is the one who ultimately secures me and sustains me.
Yes.
And when I lose sight of that, that is what's going to be part of what makes my relationships more anxious. So this is a little rambly and a little,
hopefully
seeing a through line through it.
It blessed
but I felt like I was able to, you know, God really met me in that moment, and that helped me to see better the way that I am loved by people around me, and hopefully is helping me continue to be more proactive in loving others, which is still something that, you know, I always joke that I think a lot of nice thoughts about people, but I'm not always the best at making sure I express that. So I don't know. Trying to grow in that.
I appreciate that kind of transparency from you again, because, and I tease you and you joke back, but you know that there's this way that I just like really admire you, and I really admire like the life that you've built and the way that you live your life. And that's like very, very authentically how I feel. And so just kind of these like ways that's like, yeah, like, but even the most like productive, successful, healthy people are working through their stuff. Totally. Right, I'm like, what do you mean you think people don't like you? You're the one that everybody does like. Yeah. It's the rest of us.
Yeah. Mm. No. And I think that's I've had that experience also with people I admire. And obviously, mm-hmm. you know, I have a great deal of admiration for you. But different people that I admire, you go just like, man, we're all just human. Trying to figure it out. It really helps with jealousy, by the way, when you realize 100%. Like everybody's got.
Don't be jealous of nobody because you don't know what's going on.
There's nobody on planet. There are people I admire, of course, and think, man, they've really got this area of their life dialed. I'm not jealous of anybody because I've learned everyone's got something that they're struggling with. All right, we got to wrap this up, but I want to hear from you. Where did you feel closest to God this year, and where did you feel furthest?
Yeah,
don't feel like you need to rush, even though I just said.
In the same moment. So, this year I started having panic attacks, but I didn't know that that's what they were.
Hmm.
I had no idea. I'd never had a panic attack. My anxiety doesn't feel how I think anxiety should feel. So it's hard for me to identify it.
Yeah.
And I had never had a panic attack before. Hmm. And I started having them pretty consistently. And, that is a part of why I was also drinking the wine as I was going to sleep is because the goal was like get to sleep before it would happen at night when I'm in the bed, just laying there about to go to sleep. When I tell you my compassion for people who deal with panic attacks regularly has skyrocketed. I just never understood. I never, ever understood. If you're in my life and you told me about a panic attack and I was anything less than just like the most, and so I would try to like, the goal was like, get sleep before you have this feeling.
Yeah.
And when that's, you know, when that's not a sustainable coping strategy. And so there were lots of moments this year where like literally I'd be in the bed and, you know, if you have panic attacks, you feel like you're dying. I feel like I'm dying. And like literally it's like, all I can do is cleave to the Lord. Like, all I can do is just, like, reach out and just be like, Lord, I just, like, need you.
Yeah.
And what's so special about that for me is that it taught me how deeply reliable God is, right? Like, in the storm, you know, in the story of the three Hebrew boys, he could have just pulled them out.
Yeah.
But he didn't. But he jumped in there with them. And the fruit of that is, literally last night I had a panic attack. And as it was starting, I remember there was this moment of, I don't want to say excitement, but like, oh, I'm about to be close with the Lord. Like literally, like in my heart of like, oh, this is about to be some like, I'm about to talk to God for like the next hour. And I knew what to do. And so I went and I sat in my bathroom. I turned on the water and then the shower water helps the sound. Sat on the floor and just prayed. And very quickly found some relief. Also, shout out to Yogi Stress Tea. That really helps. And some other tools. But the idea of the closest I've ever felt to God was this very internal crisis. And because of the internal nature of it, nobody can really help. If you're having a panic attack, like there are things that your friends can do and say and help kind of ground you, but really,
there's not much.
It's you. Like it's, you know, and so to be in those moments and to have it be so private, because so much of what the Lord does in my life gets translated very quickly to how can it bless other people in terms of let me preach about it, let me tell about it, let me tell a student about it in a one-on-one. But this was just like very, Lord, this is just me and you are showing yourself as God in my life. And so I felt so close to him. And before I had learned that that was the solution, I felt so far because I was like, Lord, I deserve better than this. What is going on? So anyway, that was the best.
Hoo-wee. We're getting vulnerable today.
That's
awesome, man. Thanks for sharing. All right, good stuff. Encourage you guys to reflect on how would you answer those questions as well as we lean into the new year. We'll be right back. We are back, and we are going to end the episode with a couple of predictions for 2026. These predictions Who knows how accurate they will be? They'll likely be ridiculous when we get to December and look back on this year. But, Pastor Judah, share with me your first prediction for 2026.
I think 2026 will be the end of our two-party system. I think that...
Really?
I do. I don't think that it will be cemented, but I think that it will be a real shift towards some more players on the field in terms of how we kind of organize around things that we care about. But I think that kind of binary Democratic-Republican kind of binary system, I think that this is the beginning of the ending of that, for real.
I hope you're right. Listeners to this show will know my extreme distaste for both political parties and
I think there will still
political
be political
system.
Parties.
Sure,
I
sure,
think
sure.
It won't be these
but,
two in this iteration.
You know, if we can get some more players on the field, that would not be a bad thing. Okay, my first prediction is I think 2026 is really going to be the year where people are going to wind up in embarrassing situations because of their over-reliance on AI.
Mm-hmm.
I like AI. I use AI on almost a daily basis. I really try hard not to ask AI to do thinking for me, except for like research type things. But I think we're going to find so many situations where people get up and give a presentation and they just used AI and didn't really think about it. Now they're asked questions and they can't do it. Or they pose as experts online and they're immediately like seeing that they're not. I think we as a society, I mean, AI is a Ferrari and we are toddlers who have been handed the keys. So we don't know quite what we're doing yet. I think we're going to hear a lot of stories of people getting called out and embarrassed for their over-reliance on AI and trying to get AI to do work for them that they should have done themselves.
I think that's facts.
Yes.
Wouldn't we
love it? Okay, what's your second prediction?
Okay. I think that in 2026, red meat is going to become the new health craze. I think that red meat, I think so, that red meat is going to become the thing that you remember for a minute where everybody was like chicken breast, chicken breast, chicken breast, chicken breast, chicken breast. I really believe that red meat, particularly beef, is going to become the thing. I really do. That's just me.
All right. Well,
I'm going to add one more.
Our non-doctor, who is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, who is not qualified to speak on matters of nutrition, would certainly agree with you. So I'm down with him and what he says about not eating highly processed foods. He's right about that. But they just came out with new nutritional guidance today, emphasizing protein, healthy fat, and healthy fats. So he may join you in your love for red meat.
I also think that Gen Z... Christians, in terms of the aesthetic, there's kind of like an aesthetic to Gen Z Christians, a look.
Okay.
I actually think that that's going to change in 2026.
Okay.
Right now,
what
it's kind
mean?
Of like the baggy kind of grunge look. The girls will be like wearing the baggy bottoms and the tight tops. The guys are just doing bad. I think that that's going to shift in 2026.
Okay. What are we shifting to?
I'm not sure what they're going to shift to. I just think that they're going. I think they're going to.
So like this can't last, sort of thing.
Yeah, I really think so. We'll see.
We will see. I have certainly given up predicting fashion trends as a person of my age. I don't know. I don't understand. It is what it is, and I just look at I look at things that were cool in high school that are now cool again, and I'm very confused. But not confused about my appreciation for all of you listening to Engaging Culture. We'll be back in 2 weeks for another episode. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.